This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, February 15th, 2005. Welcome, WBAI listeners, those of you in the tri-state area of New York, and those listening via the internet at www.wbai.org. We have a very special three-hour program for you today, A Vision of Hell, the Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. In the last time for our WBAI special, we considered the torment, the torture of human beings with buried alive, the unspeakable conditions in U.S. prisons, the conditions confronted by over 2 million people. Today, we are going to consider the torment and torture of billions of creatures, A Vision of Hell, the Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. It is a two-hour, two-CD program, yours for your contribution to WBAI of $100. This is the last day of the WBAI Fund Drive, and we know that all of you who are Taking Aim's regular listeners and those of you who tune in each week for Hugh Hamilton's Talkback program want to make this a very special moment to show that you appreciate having WBAI come to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A Vision of Hell, the Unspeakable Torment of Other Species, is one of our most significant Taking Aim programs. And we are going to be on today with this and excerpts from this premium and new information. Remember, 212-209-2950. Again, 212-209-2950 is the telephone number to call. And during this program, we'll have much opportunity to hear from Ralph and me about the information on this premium and also new information that we're going to bring to you about the unspeakable torment of other species. Ralph, a word before we go to the show?
Yes, Myra. Again, I want to express our appreciation and ongoing thanks to Michael Berenzweig, who has not only been a militant fighter for the rights of animals, but has been our Jiminy Cricket, keeping us conscious and aware of the necessity to present this material and to alert people to the enormity of the crime, of the slaughter, and the torment, and the torture, and the butchery of other living creatures.
Okay, our engineer today, Michael G. Haskins, is going to be with us during these 3 hours. And, Michael, let's go to the first CD.
Imagine being hit on the head and finding yourself dazed, but still fully conscious. A chain is attached to one of your legs, and you're hoisted upside down. As you lash out in terror, gigantic clippers are used to snip off the lower parts of your legs and arms. Completely helpless, you feel cuts into your thighs, belly, and sides. Your skin is stripped from your legs to your neck. Even with the skin peeled back all the way up to your head, you are conscious enough to struggle. Atrocities like these are happening to countless animals every day in United States slaughterhouses. This is a portion of the text of a full-page advertisement that appeared in the New York Times in 2001, placed by the Humane Farming Association. A Vision of Hell, the Unspeakable Torment of Other Species, is our Taking Aim program today. Ralph?
This program is dedicated to Michael Berenzweig, who has been our Jiminy Cricket, conscience prodding us, constantly reminding us of the association between the torment of animals and the exploitation and oppression within the human species. It is dedicated as well to the memory and the example of Henry Spira, the merchant seaman and revolutionist of the Socialist Workers' Party, who was the first organizer, inspirer, and strategist for the animal rights movement in the United States. Throughout human prehistory and historical record, the torment and victimization of individuals, of groups, of classes, of nations have produced a movement of people for a rectification of wrong. It gave rise to the consciousness of the need for codes and for a moral sensibility that could challenge perceived injustice and the experience of harm. And yet, within our own experience as a species, there has been an indecent exceptionalism, an exceptionalism that has permitted the most relentless and unimaginable cruelty to every form of life except our own, and that in the name of a presumptive hegemony over other living creatures, the denial of their sensibilities, of their capacity for pain, for their possession of emotion and of consciousness itself. And there is an extraordinary parallel between this treatment of other species and ways in which we have tormented our own. In that regard, one of the most important studies and books on this subject, The Dreaded Comparison, Human and Animal Slavery by Marjorie Spiegel, draws an eerie and compelling and overwhelming parallel between the ways in which we deaden our senses and deny the realities of existence for others, in one-to-one analogy between slavery itself and the treatment of animals. And this book, with a long introduction, an important introduction by Alice Walker, opens with the poem of Paul Laurence Dunbar, the African-American poet and the son of two runaway slaves, who lived from 1872 to 1906. The poem, "I Know What the Caged Bird Feels, Alas." When the sun is bright on the upland slopes, when the wind stirs soft through springing grass, and the river flows like a stream of glass, when the first bird sings and the first bud opes, and the faint perfume from its chalice steals, I know what the caged bird feels. I know why the caged bird beats his wing till its blood is red on the cruel bars, for he must fly back to his perch and cling when fain would be on the bough a swing, and the pain throbs in the old, old scars, and they pulse again with a keener sting, and I know why he beats his wing, and I know why the caged bird sings, ah me, when his wing is bruised and his bosom sore, when he beats his bars and he would be free. It is not a carol of joy or glee, but a prayer that he sends from his heart's deep core, but a plea that upward to heaven flings. And I know why that caged bird sings. And so does this book parallel the existence of torment and cruelty and denial of experience of pain and entitlement between humans enslaving each other, and the perpetual torment inflicted upon animals. And we will return to The Dreaded Comparison. But first, let us examine the meaning of torment and slaughter.
In 1996, in the United States alone, over 8 billion animals were killed for food. This figure has risen to 10 billion today. Among those innocent victims were 8 billion meat chickens, 407 million egg chickens, 409 million turkeys, 101 million pigs, 37 million cattle, 22 million ducks, 7 million calves for veal. Now, this figure does not include the 300,000 horses who were slaughtered each year in the United States for export to Europe and Asia for human consumption, nor does it include the 300 million male chickens who are killed at birth because they are not going to lay eggs. It also doesn't include the millions and millions of fish harvested from the sea, and the 300,000 cetaceans, the whales, the dolphins, and other cetaceans who were killed as a result of fishing industry through being caught in nets. Now, in 1973, on April 5th, 1973, an important article appeared in the New York Review of Books. Animal Liberation, it was entitled, and it was written by Peter Singer. As a result of reading this article, Henry Spira, who had been involved in the civil rights movement and had been an author, a reporter for the Militant, the publication, the newspaper of the Socialist Workers' Party, he had read it, and this is what he wrote in response. I had no inkling of animal welfare as a political issue, but I soon began to wonder about the appropriateness of cuddling one animal while sticking a knife and fork into others. It was then that I came across Peter Singer's essay. Singer described a universe of more than 4 billion animals being killed each year in the USA alone. Now, that's 4 billion in 1973, and as I mentioned before, it's now 10 billion animals. Their suffering is intense, wrote Henry Spira, widespread, expanding, systematic, and socially sanctioned. And the victims are unable to organize in defense of their own interests. I felt that animal liberation was the logical extension of what my life was all about, identifying with the powerless and the vulnerable, the victims dominated and oppressed. Ralph?
The book Slaughterhouse by Gail Eisnitz, which is a meticulous and stunning and numbing setting forth of what the daily and constant treatment of animals actually entails,
It was reviewed by Alex Hirschaft, who is the president of an organization called FARM, who's had 25 years working on behalf of farm animal issues. Ralph?
Now, in that review, Alex Hirschaft described the biomedical research laboratories, the factory farms, the slaughterhouses, what he calls the faceless compounds where our society conducts its dirty business of exploiting, abusing, and killing innocent feeling beings. These are our Dachau's, our Buchenwald's, our Birkenau's. And like the good German burghers, we have a very fair idea of what goes on, but we don't want a reality check. We rationalize the killing. We say it has to be done. We pretend it is done humanely. We fear that the truth would offend our sensibilities and even force us to do something. And then in this review, he quotes as follows. The agony starts when the animals are hauled over long distances under extreme crowding and harsh temperatures. Here is an account of workers assigned to unloading pigs. In the winter, the hogs come all frozen to the sides of the trucks. They tie chains around them and jerk them off the walls, leaving chunks of hide and flesh behind. They may have a little bit of life left in them, but the workers throw them on the piles of the dead. They die sooner or later. At the slaughterhouse, the animals are too injured to walk, and others refuse to go quietly to their deaths. Here's how they are dealt with. The preferred method of handling a cripple is to beat him to death with a lead pipe before he gets into the chute. If you get a hog into a chute that's had the shit prodded out of him and has a heart attack or refuses to move, you take a meat hook and hook it into his bunghole, his anus, and the meat hook rips out of the bunghole. I've seen the thighs completely ripped open. I've seen the intestines come out of the live animal. And here's what awaits the animals on the kill floor. The testimony of a horse slaughterhouse worker. You move so fast you don't have time to wait till the horse bleeds out. We skin them as they bleed. A horse's nose is down in the blood, blowing bubbles as he suffocates. Another worker on the cow slaughter. The skinner finds the cows still conscious when he slices the sides of their heads and starts kicking wildly. If that happens, the skinner shoves a knife into the back of the head to cut the spinal cord. This paralyzed the animal, but does not stop the pain of being skinned alive. On calf slaughter, to get done with them faster, we put 8 or 9 of them in the knocking box at a time. You start shooting. The calves are jumping. They're all piling on top of each other. You don't know which ones got shot and which did not. They're hung anyway, and down the line they go, wriggling and shrieking to be slaughtered while fully conscious. And on pig slaughter, when the hog is conscious, it takes a long time for him to bleed out. These hogs get up to the scalding tank, hit the water, and they start kicking and screaming. There's a rotating arm that pushes them under. There's no chance for them to get out. We don't know if they burn to death before they drown, but they're conscious of it all, and it takes them a couple of minutes to stop thrashing.
Eleanor Kennelly, an organizer with the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, reported, quote, "A meatpacking plant is like nothing you've ever seen or could imagine. It's like a vision of hell." The beef, the poultry, and the hog industry workers are among the most exploited, the most inhumanely treated workers. Safety is a problem for the workers. They operate sharp instruments. They stand on slippery floors with the blood and gore. They're surrounded by conscious animals kicking for their lives and pressed for speeding slaughter time. Indeed, 36% of all packing workers incur serious injuries. It's the most hazardous job in America. The workers who are disabled complain about the working conditions, but frequently little is done about it. Nowadays, undocumented aliens are brought from Mexico and from other countries to replace the workers who refuse to work under these conditions.
This has always been the common and the shared experience, the exploitation of the worker and the torment of the animals. Indeed, I have to tell the story, the account of my father, who in his stateless condition was working in the slaughterhouses of Montevideo. And as he went up the conveyor belt with the tormented animals onto the upper floor, where the men were wearing hip boots, and he and his colleague, his comrade, who was a worker from India, were slogging around in the guts and the gore, when my father, out of his peripheral vision, saw his friend lose his footing and slip. In the center of this vast second floor was a hole, and beneath the hole were the grinding pits. And into that pit fell my father's co-worker. And he ran to the foreman shrieking, and the foreman looked at him and said, "Corned beef." They ground that man right up. They estimated that he would have been dead anyway, and it would have taken too long to stop the machinery. Ground him right up with the animals that were being slaughtered and killed. And indeed, the work takes an emotional toll on the workers, as described by Eisenitz. "I've taken out my job pressure," she quotes a worker, and my frustration on the animals, on my wife, on myself, with my heavy drinking. It gets worse. With an animal who pisses you off, you don't just kill it. You blow the windpipe. You make it drown in its own blood. You split its nose. I cut its eyes out. The hogs would just scream. Once I sliced off the end of the hog's nose, the hog went crazy, and I took a handful of salt brine and ground it into the nose. Now that hog really went nuts." Unquote. Safety is the primary problem for workers who operate sharp instruments. They stand on a floor slippery with blood and gore, surrounded by conscious animals kicking for their lives and pressed by a speeding slaughter line. 36% incur serious injuries, making their work the most hazardous in America.
Pork Power. Pork Power was the title of a CBS expose that appeared on 60 Minutes, September 19th, 1997, and was replayed on June 22nd, 2003, 1 week ago. Correspondent Morley Safer reported about conditions in North Carolina. Tobacco had once been the number one crop in North Carolina, but it's been replaced by hogs. And now the hog industry is a $1 billion industry in North Carolina. At any given moment, North Carolina houses 10 million hogs in barns as large as football fields on huge industrial farms. Their future? 160 days of life before slaughter. 165 days. These real-life babes, referring to the movie, the famous movie that was nominated for Academy Awards, see no sun in their limited lives, according to Morley Safer. No hay to lie on, no mud to roll in, and they do not talk. The sows live in tiny cages, so narrow they can't even turn around. They live over metal grates. Their waste is pushed through slats beneath them and flushed into huge pits. In fact, North Carolina has become one vast toilet. These are cesspools, not lagoons, that contain the excrement. It holds 9.5 million tons of hog manure that's produced in North Carolina every year. You can't spray that much manure over the fields of North Carolina. They just won't absorb it all. The result? The poisoning of the groundwater and the contamination of drinking wells. In North Carolina, people depend in the rural areas upon these wells for their safe drinking water. But today, you have hazardous industrial waste, according to Larry Cahoon, a scientist at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. Hazardous industrial waste, germs, bacteria, viruses such as flu virus, protozoan, various worm-type parasites. The state toxicologist in North Carolina said that 30% of the wells tested near the hog farms are already contaminated. The largest pork producer in the world, Wendell Murphy, was a North Carolina state senator for 10 years. He's also responsible, many say, for creating the dozens of laws that protect the pork industry, protect this pollution, protect this contamination of the state of North Carolina and the people within it. And the part owner of the farm, owned by Wendell Murphy, is none other than North Carolina's U.S. Senator Larch Faircloth. He chairs a subcommittee on the environment. He also owns a $19 million stake in the hog business. Ralph?
Yes, Maya. The Movement for Humane Farming gave a detailed report on what factory farming, which is the dominant form of food production in the United States as it is in other societies, what it really entails. Every time you order a hamburger or a cheeseburger, you are contributing to the horrors below, as the report states. They quote Ralph Waldo Emerson, quote, "You have just dined, and however scrupulously the slaughterhouse is concealed in the graceful distance of miles, you are involved, and there is complicity." A USDA employee contacted the Humane Farming Association and gave them a detailed account. Animals at the plant had their heads skinned while fully conscious. Investigations confirmed that not only were these reports accurate, but the animals were routinely dragged, strangled, beaten, scalded, and dismembered alive.
You've been listening to A Vision of Hell, the Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. This is our first excerpt from the first CD of a 2-CD, 2-hour program. Our premium for the last day of the WBAI Fund Drive, $100 contribution to WBAI, 212-209-2950. As you can tell, this is a very hard-hitting, relentless program that you will want to share with your friends, your family, your colleagues, and you'll want to listen to over and over again. Ralph?
Well, Maya, what we're dealing with here is the indecent exceptionalism that defines the ways in which we numb ourselves to horror, social injustice, and cruelty. And as we're all aware, the capacity to do this, which is a long-standing feature of the way in which human beings are oppressed, extends to all aspects of life. We cannot confine our awareness to our local village, our local community, our local nation, or to our particular affiliations. We've all understood that. The slaughter that defines the treatment of other human beings is not confined to our species alone. And if we are conscious of that, we begin to understand the social structures and the ideology that sustains this inhuman, ironically enough, it's a term that we have coined to flatter ourselves, because what we call inhuman is unfortunately a defining element of human conduct, over over the millennia. But we ask our listeners to take heed of what we are discussing here. There is no Maginot line between the treatment of other species and the treatment of our own. The social structures that allowed and which encouraged slavery were rooted in the domestication of animals. All of the particular cruelties inflicted on breaking the will of sentient creatures and bending them to our control and to our rapacious need are applied within the species as well. If we are clear about this, we begin to understand that this is not a matter of moralism. It's not a matter of voluntarism. It's a matter of understanding the structures that we have erected over a course of, the course of our history, and the need to remove those structures, to overthrow those structures, and to open our minds to the reality that they impose upon us. That's the information that this programming provides, and that's, we hope, the epiphany, the understanding, the realization that we can accelerate and excite, to bring people to an awareness that cruelty has no boundaries, whether it's within nations or races or classes.
Ralph, I'd like to refer to the philosopher Jeremy Bentham, because at the time of the French Revolution, and when the French Revolution, one of the aspects of it was the freeing of the black slaves, and slavery was predominant throughout the French colonies. And Bentham wrote, quote, "The day may come when the rest of the animal creation may acquire those rights which never could have been withholden from them but by the hand of tyranny. The French have already discovered that the blackness of the skin is no reason why a human being should be abandoned without redress to the caprice of a tormentor. It may one day come to be recognized that the number of the legs, the velocity of the skin, or the termination of the os sacrum are reasons equally insufficient for abandoning a sensitive being to the same fate. What else is it that should trace the insuperable line?" And Bentham continues, "Is it the faculty of reason or perhaps the faculty of discourse? But a full-grown horse or a dog is beyond comparison a more rational as well as a more conversable animal than an infant of a day or a week or even a month old. But suppose they were otherwise, what would it avail? The question is not, can they reason, nor can they talk? Can they suffer?" And this is from the philosopher Jeremy Bentham, writing at the time of the emancipation of slavery by the French.
Well, Maya, the relationship between the enslavement of human beings and the torture and the enslavement of animals is one-to-one. Every serious study about the origins of slavery relate it to the treatment of other peoples conquered and other species enslaved. There is a necessity of numbing ourselves to what this means, and the cruelty that is inflicted is a question of advantage, structured advantage, institutionalized advantage, privilege and class. Coercion and cruelty always follow in their wake.
And this is a major topic in A Vision of Hell, The Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. I want to hear those phones ringing, 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 because that is the sound that we need to keep the CDs playing and bringing this to you. As you know, Taking Aim comes to you every week on WBAI, and if it weren't for the station, you wouldn't be hearing the news, the analysis, the important work that we bring to you that you appreciate so much. So today we have brought you one of the unique programs that we produced, and it is a program that you wouldn't hear anywhere else, A Vision of Hell, The Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. Maybe elsewhere you hear a little bit here, a tidbit there, or some revelation of the consequences, such as an expose of the results of the industrial pig farming. But nowhere is it all put together except in A Vision of Hell, The Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. Your contribution, $100 to WBAI, and our gift to you is this two-CD program, which will edit it very tight, two-CD, $100 contribution of Vision of Hell. Remember, it is our gift to you for your gift of sustaining WBAI. A Vision of Hell, the Unspeakable Torment of Other Species, 212-209-2950. Ralph.
Well, I want to emphasize to our listeners that even within our programming on Pacifica and on WBAI itself, there is always the necessity for advancing our understanding and our consciousness, because we have a propensity, all of us, to be sectional in the way we apply our vision of injustice and the need for struggle. We confine it to that with which we are familiar. We're in something of denial about when it is shown to us to apply to far wider reaches than we were prepared to consider. The reality is that the injustice that we are constantly railing against when it comes to our own species are rooted in the structures that facilitate the torture, torment, and slaughter of other living creatures. Take the example of the Holocaust and of the destruction of the Jews of Eastern Europe, indeed of Europe at large, during the Second World War. And in that regard, a remarkable book, Eternal Treblinka, by Charles Patterson, makes the analogy and structures an analysis which shows the industrialized slaughterhouse to be the predecessor and the predicate for the extermination of the Jews and Gypsies and Slavs of Europe. But in a very real sense, brothers and sisters, what we call the Holocaust and the Nazi phenomenon is but the internalization within Europe of the colonial process itself, replete with the ideology of Untermensch. Before there was a slaughter in the Holocaust, there was the butchery of Africa, Asia, and Latin America. 100 million indigenous peoples eliminated in the Americas alone. In one silver mine in Potosi in Bolivia, 6 million slaves and indentured laborers slaughtered over the process of over the life and existence of that mine. A Vision of Hell puts this together, shows the relationship between the structures of injustice, the power that is rooted in it, the class nature of that power, and the ideology that sustains it. And it goes to the very daily existence that we have, brothers and sisters, because it's not only that our continued living is rooted in the butchery of other living creatures, but we punish ourselves and harm ourselves in the process. We describe in the Vision of Hell the fact that we are primates. And as primates, we have the physiological structure of herbivores. We don't have the ripping teeth that herbivores have. We have grinding teeth. We don't have the hydrochloric acid to break down bone and flesh. Above all, we have very long intestines like all herbivores.
You're getting ahead of yourself. That's one of the excerpts we're going to be playing, and we don't want to play it until we hear those phones ringing.
You're right.
212-209-2950.
What we're trying to do here is to show the connection and for our listeners to understand those relationships, because our well-being, our health, our survival is tied to the treatment that we accord other living creatures. It rebounds upon ourselves. There is no Maginot line. And we ask you to understand the importance of breaking down these barriers, of speaking truth not only to power but even to ourselves, for us to extend our awareness, extend our sensibility, so we embrace and experience and register and react to and respond in a necessary way to the cruelty that is part of the lives that we lead and the lives that we endure. Please call this station, call the number, support Taking Aim, get this premium, afford and avail yourself of not only in the information, but of the understanding that connects the data and allows us to see a way forward, a strategy for transcendence. That's what Vision of Hell is primarily about.
Yes. 212-209-2950, A Vision of Hell, the Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. The torment of other species leads to the destruction of the human species itself, whether it's by, as Ralph is discussing, our own biology through what we eat and the incidence of cancer and other degenerative diseases. The destruction of the ecosystem. This is also discussed in A Vision of Hell at the end of Part 1. And the incredible domination and what that means psychologically to people. A Vision of Hell, 212-209-2950 for your contribution of $100 is remarkable, and I have to say, because every time I listen to it, I myself separate myself from the fact that it's me speaking. It is remarkable for its information and the synthesis of this information. 212-209-2950, $100 contribution to WBAI. And Michael, let's go on to another excerpt from A Vision of Hell.
A Vision of Hell, the unspeakable torment of other species, Mayan Ralph. Two CD set for a pledge of $100. We have two calls on the line now at 212-209-2950. It's important to have this information to, as Ralph said, to make these connections. It is difficult to listen to and to understand what we are in fact doing as we are consuming the animals that we consume. As someone who is a meat eater myself, I question my own practices. This gets you right into the heart of what is going on, what we do as we are consuming these animals. These are not, animals that are raised, and even if that was okay, raised on farms and running fancy free. We're trying to raise money to keep this station on the air, to keep Taking AIM right where it is. It's usually on at 5 p.m. This is a special edition of Taking AIM, A Vision of Hell, the unspeakable torment of other species. A 2-CD premium, three calls on the line now, 212-209-2950. Support Taking AIM, support the work that is being done here at WBAI. Four calls coming in right now, 212-209-2950. There's much, much more to come, but we do need to hear from you. We do need to see your support, your financial support of this radio station. Please do make your calls right now. Remember, the regular subscription is $50 or $25 if you're a student or senior citizen. But if you'd like to get A Vision from Hell, the 2-CD premium for a pledge of $100, make your calls right now. We have some volunteers in the back of the tally room right now, and they're standing by. They are taking calls right now. We'll be going right back to this premium, this extraordinary premium, A Vision of Hell, by Ralph Shulman and Maya Shulman. It almost literally takes my breath away when your father's mate, your father's co-worker, was slipped and fell into the vat and was ground up, and they didn't even stop the assembly line. That is, in fact, what happens, because time is money. They will not stop for an accident like that, because it shuts down the entire assembly line. They don't want to do that because they are concerned with making money. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Please continue to make your calls now as we go back to the programming, this special edition of Taking AIM with Ralph Shulman and Maya Shulman here on WBAI.
The reason these things are happening is factory farming. Since the post-war in this country, post-Second World War, the family farm has been replaced by huge operations run by major corporations. The biggest move has been in slaughterhouses that kill at a rate of 1,100 animals per hour. One worker is required to kill an animal every 3 seconds, and slowdowns in the assembly line are not tolerated.
But Ralph, whether it's on a factory farm or a family farm, the slaughter is slaughter of these living, thinking, feeling creatures.
Without any question, Maya, and indeed, as you say, whether it's with an axe, with a knife to the carotid artery, the death and the agony is real. But the systematic assembly line, factory-like, massive butchery of animals in their hundreds of millions, indeed in their billions, with torment as the defining feature, analogous to the Auschwitzes and the Birkenaus and the Maidenbecks, is the feature of capitalist industrial production of so-called food. Slow down in the assembly line is not tolerated. The animals are not able to reach unconsciousness. Rarely does the equipment work properly, the report continues. Workers pound away at cows' heads to beat them unconscious, and they repeatedly shock pigs. To avoid slowdowns, the animals are shackled, hoisted, skinned, dismembered while alive. The investigations reveal the downed animals, those too weak to move, are beaten with lead pipes and dragged and strangled to the kill area with cables. Saws, blowtorches are used on the live animals. Their legs are caught in chutes and trucks. The workers routinely skin their heads, bellies, sides, rumps. They remove their legs, their ears, their horns, their tails. They begin eviscerating the cattle while they are alive, the report continues. Animals with their legs caught in holding pens are dragged with hooks, and you hear the bones breaking. And these statistics do not include the chickens, who are exempt from any nominal coverage by any animal act. They are regularly starved. Their heads and legs are cut off without anesthesia. They are immersed in scalding tanks while alive. The pigs are immersed in scalding tanks to loosen their bristles over 140 degrees. They are transported on the backs of trucks at sub-freezing temperatures. The animals on the rails of the trucks routinely freeze to the sides of their trunks. The workers use chains to rip them off, leaving chunks of their flesh stuck to the truck. To keep the line moving, workers jab meat hooks into their mouths and anuses and drag them. They run them over with tractors. They cut their noses and eyes out of live pigs. The environmental impact is overwhelming. 1 pound of meat requires 2,500 gallons of water. A large chicken factory goes through 100 million gallons of water a day. The number of animals in the U.S. raised for food produce 68,000 pounds of manure per second, 130 times as much fecal matter as the entire human population, and the report goes on.
In fact, Ralph, 14,000 chickens are slaughtered every minute in the United States and 90,000 cows and calves every 24 hours. Now, what this means, this intensified compaction of animals within these industrial food companies, it means that animals get sick, they kill each other, and so chickens at birth, soon after birth, are de-beaked. And in order to prevent disease, antibiotics are routinely put in the animal feed. The proportion of antibiotics that are used in animal agriculture is 40%. The proportion of these antibiotics that are used to promote rapid growth is 80%. And these antibiotics find themselves to people. And as a result, what's happened is that people are becoming resistant to many antibiotics. The other factor of the intensive condition is that pigs, for instance, in the United States, who have pneumonia at the time of slaughter, the percentage is 70%. And the primary source of Campylobacter is contaminated chicken flesh. The people who become ill in the United States with Campylobacter poisoning every day is more than 5,000 people. Now, American turkeys sufficiently contaminated with Campylobacter also cause illness. And 90% of the turkeys are contaminated with Campylobacter. Again, Americans become sickened from eating salmonella-tainted eggs. In California, for instance, there were reports in the Los Angeles Times many years ago that 1 out of 4 chickens was contaminated with salmonella. And the number of Americans who are sickened each year from salmonella-tainted eggs, more than 650,000 people. Of these, the people who die, 100. Now, the increase in salmonella poisoning between 1976 and 1986 was 600% because of this intensive factory farming. Another disease, leucosis, which is chicken cancer, 90% of U.S. chickens are infected at the time of slaughter. So those of you who think that by not eating beef and instead eating chicken, you are having safer food, be forewarned by these statistics.
Actually, Maya, the treatment of chickens, as with hogs and with other creatures, is beyond imagination. They are confined in cages where they cannot move a muscle. Their beaks are cut off without anesthesia, of course, to prevent them from pecking themselves and pecking each other out of despair and out of hysteria. The animals are tormented in this fashion. They never move from day one to day final. The chickens were the first farm animals to be permanently confined in such large numbers in automated systems. The chickens, which were raised in towns and villages and farms in back lots, are now condemned to this industrialized factory system in which they never have a waking moment that is free of confinement from birth to death. Chickens, turkeys, ducks, domestic game fowl, guineas, peasants, pigeons confined by the thousands in stressful, densely packed cages, permeated with excrement in the form of accumulated droppings, excretory ammonia fumes, disease inevitable. Hundreds of millions of chickens, leaking yellow pus, stained by green feces, contaminated by harm bacteria, marred by lung and heart infections, cancers, tumors, and skin conditions are bred and are shipped and become food in that condition. Despite this, domestic consumption of poultry and eggs products continues, with the result in more and more areas of the country are despoiled as the poultry complexes multiply. The broiler chickens and turkeys at slaughter are not stunned but are immobilized with painful electric currents. The cruelty of poultry slaughter has increased in recent years because younger and heavier birds with extremely fragile capillaries are processed for the fast food and rotisserie trade, resulting in hemorrhage under electric current, constant torment, shrieking, immobility, and agonizing death.
In 1999, on November 28th, The Washington Post began a four-part series written by Lena Sun and Gabriel Escobar. It was an expose of the poultry industry, describing conditions such as Ralph gave about the treatment of the chickens and also the treatment of the workers. The articles focused on Delmarva. Delmarva is an area in Maryland and Virginia. And Delaware, there were a dozen slaughterhouses on the coasts of the eastern shorelines with Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia. 60 million pounds of chickens were processed there in 1999. Tyson Foods owned two plants in Delmarva. Purdue Farms, based in Salisbury, Maryland, had five processing plants in the area. And then there are lesser-known companies such as Montair Farms, Allen Farm Foods, and Townsend, Inc. The modern chicken industry was born in Delmarva, and now the region is the country's fifth-largest poultry producer, selling primarily to the Northeast in places such as New York City. What you're dealing with is cost per pound per man-hour, boiled down to a thousandth of a cent, said Jerry Burrell, a business agent for the United Food and Commercial Workers, which represents six of the peninsula's 12 plants. Line speed is regulated only by the Department of Agriculture, and that is for monitoring the speed of the monitoring of the food, the chickens, not for the workers' strain. And the limits are set to give inspectors time to check the birds for disease or contamination. But as we have said before, the disease and the contamination still is in the food chain.
You are listening to A Vision of Hell, the Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. This is Maya Schoen and
Ralph Schoenman.
And A Vision of Hell is our premium for this WBAI fund drive. 212-209-2950, your $100 contribution to WBAI for this two CD, two-hour set. Now, as you hear on A Vision of Hell, we discuss in great detail what goes on in slaughterhouses. And I want to bring up that today, 10 billion animals a year are being slaughtered in the United States. 10 billion animals per year. In part one, we discuss this, the animals in the food chain. And in part two, we discuss the experimentation of animals, and we're going to play excerpts from that at 5 o'clock. Meanwhile, 212-209-2950, we're here in California. We rely upon Michael G. in the studios to let us know how the phones are ringing, and believe me, this is something that you're going to say you have missed if you don't get on the phone right now. 212-209-2950. One thing I'd like to discuss is Temple Grandin. Temple Grandin's book, Animals in Translation, is now rising up on the New York Times bestseller list. And she is a woman who's autistic and still managed, despite her autism, to get a PhD in animal behavior. And she has designed one half of the slaughterhouses, the revisions to slaughterhouses in the United States, with what she considers, through her analysis of animal behavior, a very significant analysis, a prescient analysis of animal behavior, what she calls humane slaughterhouses. And we'd like to say that this is an oxymoron, because as you hear in A Vision of Hell, the slaughter of animals in itself cannot be humane. And what is happening with these so-called humane slaughterhouses, which are programs being instituted by McDonald's and other large corporations, is in effect more efficient slaughter. Because as Grandin writes, not too long ago I got a call to go out to a meatpacking plant where the animals were getting big fat bruises on their loins. Loins is the area in between a cow's rib cage and its rear leg. It's the most expensive part of the animal because that's where the steak is located. So nobody wants their cattle getting bruised loins. And what she did is analyze how they were putting the cows through the chute, and she found a way to make it more comfortable for the cows to go to the slaughter.
Oh, Ralph. How generous of her. I mean, really, for sake. You're talking about what? A moment of anesthesia where an animal that's confined without the ability to move? You think that the terror is lessened when the industrial assembly line of slaughter proceeds and the animals hear the shrieking and watch the fate of all of those around them? You think a moment of anesthesia mitigates that? Look, we have, as I mentioned, Maya, 25 feet of intestines like herbivores. When flesh dies, when it no longer is oxygenated, it rots, it putrefies. You have to get it underground, or you have to put formaldehyde on it, or it proceeds to decay and produce toxins, highly, highly deadly toxins. What do we do with food, what we call food? You can color it, you can dye it, you can do want, but it's decaying, rotting flesh. And with our 25 feet of intestines, we house that, not for days and weeks and months, but for years. About 8% of the body weight is excrement. And that's what permeates our cell structure. And that's what compromises the detoxifying organs of the body, the liver and the kidneys. They begin to be 80% efficient, 70% efficient, 60% efficient, and now the immune system is overtaxed. What do you think is the root systemic disease, brothers and sisters? Yes, it's not just a vision of hell for those we torment. It's a vision of hell for what we do to ourselves as a species, because the consumption of other living creatures in the form of decaying, toxifying, rotting carrion and flesh poisons our bodies, compromises our immune systems, sustains systemic disease, and condemns us to the consequences. And all that arises from that is the profiteering of the drug industry and the medical industrial complex, the capitalist exploitation of this misery and of this death and slaughter and of this epidemic disease and of this reduction of life expectancy and sustainable life within our own species. That's a real matter of the chickens coming home to roost, brothers and sisters. Get this information. Arrive at this understanding. Don't hide your head in the sand, brothers and sisters. Look at the reality of what we do to others and what it means for ourselves.
212-209-2950. A Vision of Hell, the Unspeakable Torment of Other Species. As Ralph was saying, in terms of degenerative diseases and the impact of meat consumption, the statistic today is that the annual medical costs in the United States directly attributable to meat consumption